The Buick was still perfectly intact and apparently unchanged. The tarp lay in its same draped dune, unsinged by any fire. Arky's tools hung undisturbed on their pegs, and the stacks of old County American newspapers were still in the far corner, bundled and tied with twine. A single kitchen match would have been enough to turn those dry piles of old news into pillars of flame, but all that brilliant purple light hadn't charred so much as a single corner of a single Bradley's circular. "Sandy, can you see any of the specimens?" Sandy shook his head, stood back, and took off the goggles Kurt had loaned him. He passed them on to Andy Colucci, who was wild for a look into the shed. Sandy himself headed back to the barracks. Shed B was not going to blow up after all, it seemed. And he was the acting SC, with a job to do. On the back step, he paused and looked back. Even wearing goggles, Andy Colucci and the others were reluctant to approach the row of windows. There was only one exception, and that was Curtis Wilcox. He stood right there, big as Billy be damned, Sandy's mother might have said. As close as he could get, and leaning forward to get even closer. Goggles actually pressed to the glass, only turning his head aside slightly each time the thing flashed out an especially bright bolt, which it was still doing every 20 seconds or so. Sandy thought, he's apt to put his eyes out, or at least go snowblind from it. Except he wouldn't. He seemed to have almost timed the flashes to have gotten in rhythm with them. From where Sandy was, it looked as if Curtis was actually turning his face aside a second or two before each flash came. And when it did come, he would for a moment become his own exclamatory shadow, an exotic frozen dancer caught against a great sheet of purple light. Looking at him that way was scary. To Sandy, it was like watching something that was there and not there at the same time, real but not real, both solid and mirage. Sandy would later think that when it came to the Buick 8, Kurt was oddly like Mr. Dillon. He wasn't howling like the dog was upstairs in the common room, but he seemed in touch with the thing just the same, in sync with it, dancing with it. Then and later, that was how it would come back to Sandy. Dancing with it. At 6:10 that evening, Sandy radioed down the hill to Matt and asked what was up. Matt said nothing. "Nothing, Grandma," was what Sandy heard in his tone, and Sandy told him to come on back to base. When he did, Sandy said he was free to step across the parking lot and have a look at old 54 if he still wanted one. Matt was gone like a shot. When he came back a few minutes later, he looked disappointed. "I've seen it do that before," he said, leaving Sandy to reflect on how dense and thankless human beings were for the most part. How quickly their senses dulled, rendering the marvelous mundane. "Well, the guy said it really blew its stack an hour ago, but none of them could describe it." This was said with a contempt Sandy didn't find surprising. In the world of the police communications officer, everything is describable. The world's cartography must and can be laid out in 10 codes. "Well, don't look at me," Sandy said. "I can tell you one thing, though. It was bright." "Oh, bright." Matt gave him a look that said, not just a grandma, but a loser grandma. Then he went back inside.